In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Steven's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's time for your coolest conversations podcast in Little Steven's Underground Garage, presented by Hard Rock. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow and subscribe, rate, and review. My guest today is singer-songwriter and multi-instrumentalist Mark Ribbler. In addition to being Little Steven's Disciples of Soul music director, he's got an ongoing solo career, and his latest album is Armageddon, an album on Wicked Cool Records. It features our recent coolest song of the world, Dick Cavett. I'll play some of that now, and afterwards start chatting with Mark on your Coolest Conversations podcast, presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage. This is the Mighty Manfred with you here in Little Steven's Underground Garage, and my guest for today's Coolest Conversations is singer, songwriter, and multi-instrumentalist Mark Ribbler. He's also the music director for Little Steven's Disciples of Soul. He's got a brand new solo album out now, Armageddon, available from Wicked Cool Records, and it features this week's coolest song in the world, Dick Cavett. How are you, Mark?
Manfred, great hearing your voice, brother. I'm doing great, man. I'm actually looking at the Pacific Ocean right now, so I couldn't be happier.
Oh, man, that's some hard living right there. That's some hard. Oh, my goodness. I mean, Jersey boy on the West Coast. What's up with that? What are you doing out in, what are you doing out here?
We got a little gig with some dear friends of mine, Mark Rivera and a couple of the Disciples of Soul are here with me. Rich Mercurio's playing drums and Jesse Wagner's going to be hollering.
But Jesse Wagner, also a Wicked Cool recording artist.
Exactly, man. Yeah, yeah.
Very talented.
Very talented singer, performer, Jesse. And it's really a great band, man. And who else? Some other people you might know. Jeff Kazee is on keyboards from, Southside Johnny's musical director. And yeah, man, it's just a great, Crystal Talafaro from Billy Joel. It's just a really great, talented, fun, loving bunch of people, man. So we get to hang for a day and chill, between the gigs here. And so everyone's just kind of really enjoying your beautiful ocean out here, man.
Well, we were happy to share it with you. We're happy to share it with you. Now, I mean, you got your own ocean there. Apparently, it fills up the space in between the U.S. and Europe and Africa and so forth. But you're welcome to enjoy our ocean as well.
To be more specific, it's the Pacific. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, so you got these guys. You're playing, doing some gigs, and you've got a brand new album out, Armageddon. Your second for Wicked Cool. The first I'll mention is 2021's "The Whole World Awaits You." Now, Armageddon, you've got songs on there that touch on, war, horror stories. No returns, infections, tomorrows that never arrive, and other amongst other themes. Man, Mark, gosh, anything going on in the world today that kind of colored your songwriting overall?
It's really just my wild imagination, Manfred. I mean, things are so beautiful and peaceful everywhere you look that I just try to think of some dark shit and this, and, you know, and try to expound upon it. Man, you know, I wrote a lot of this album during, you know, one of the most chaotic things, you know, tumultuous and violent and you know, not to get into politics or anything, but just, you know, a couple years ago, you know, there were people climbing on, the capital of our country and trying to tear it down. And, you know, and people are saying that, you know, elections weren't fair and this and that. And man, we've made it this far in this country, you know, where, you know, and I really felt like we were getting somewhere, you know, like in the earlier 2000s, like, wow, man, we're evolving and we're finally getting past all this hatred and bigotry and, you know, and getting to more evolved and more peaceful. And then, you know, you see this and it's like, you can't help but respond. And, you know, so basically this record, you know, I was really, you know, everyone was in the middle of the pandemic, you know, we were all in the middle of the pandemic, and to see all this going on, I just need the way, you know, writing and writing music and playing music, recording music is how I heal. And it helps me understand, you know, what's going on in my life, in our lives, you know, reflecting on everything.
Here you mentioned a healing, you know, way to sort of deal with process the things that have gone on. So this was a cathartic experience for you. Where is your head at now?
Very, very cathartic, man. And so the thing that was happening is, like, I'm reflecting on what's going on right now. And then thinking about, you know, like, I was very young, but what went on in the 60s, but feeling like in the 60s, there was solidarity, man. There was like people, there was movements and people would really get involved. Now everyone is so incredibly distracted. So it's really, the record is really, and it just worked out this way, but the first side of the record is where we are right now, and where, you know, and hopefully how we could rise above where we are right now, with all the, you know, with all the turmoil, man, with you know, with bigotry, with gun violence, with, you know, children in cages, you know, refugees in cages, and the other, and side B is where we being nostalgic and sentimental about growing up in the late 60s and the 70s, and just, you know, where, you know, you sense peace and love, and you sense that this is a dream that could really happen. So it's really, you know, it's side B is our, you know, where we came from, and side A is where we are. It just kind of started in the present moment. And then I just started reflecting back.
Well, you know, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm listening, you know, as I listen to the album, I'm just listening through to the tracks, right? So, you're putting this side one, side A is ending. Does that end with the war, and side B starts with Soul Infected?
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. 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 So it's Armageddon. So we start, you know, Armageddon, it's not the end of the world, but it's the end of, you know, the way, you know, I'm looking at more like it's not total destruction. It's really maybe destruction of our belief systems and realizing that we have to transcend where we are now. So it's the death of that. And then, you know, the war, I mean, I'm a little kind of troubled that sort of as further away we've gotten from 2021, when I wrote the songs, it's like, wow, man, the war, it's like that, you know, and it's, we're in such a heavy place right now, you know, and, I am hopeful, man. I am hopeful that love will win, you know, out in the end. But man, these are troubled times, man.
So we spoke around June this year when the single, the title track Armageddon, came out. You mentioned writing, you know, a lot of these songs came out of just a couple of years ago. When did you actually record the album?
The album, so my dear friend Jack Daly, he opened the studio in Asbury in actually we kind of beta tested his studio. He was starting to open it at the end of 2020.
And here, let's mention too that Jack is he plays bass on the album, and he's also with you in the Disciples of Soul. Is that right?
That's correct. Okay. And Jack and Charlie are the primary musicians on the record. Jack and Charlie Drayton, you know, from Keith Richards fame, and
Charlie's playing drums. Yeah,
Charlie's playing drums on the record. That's right. Jack's playing bass. So you know, I was writing a few songs, and I spoke to Charlie, and I was talking to Jack about going in and recording some things and just kind of getting the bugs out of, he just wired his studio, beautiful studio in Asbury. And I invited Charlie down, and there was nothing going on. It was we got in the studio wearing masks.
Okay.
And, I wrote a couple songs, and we went in and we tracked them, a couple songs in the first day. And we were all just like, man, this feels so very unique. And it just felt so good. And I just wrote a bunch more songs in that period, and we went in like 3 or 4 times and essentially recorded the whole record. And then I finished, the overdubs and at my studio and finished up, vocals and arrangements, with Steven and Stevie Van Zandt. And then I just kind of put it on the shelf because, it wasn't really my first record had just come out. Mm-hmm. And then like a year later, I was on the phone with Steven, and I said, can I send you some, some songs I've been working on, and I sent it, and he got really excited, and we finished it. And then, and here we are now, 2 years later, actually almost 3 years later, 2000, mm-hmm. January of 21 is when we recorded the basic tracks.
Okay. And, was talking about, Jack and Charlie here. So I spoke with Jack a few weeks ago. Your tune off the album Every Picture Tells a Horror Story was the coolest song, and Jack spoke about how you guys met and your relationship there going on with the Disciples of Soul. How did Charlie come into your orbit? Why was he a go-to to play drums on the record? How did you meet him?
Charlie, I actually met Charlie through Mark Rivera, maybe 10 years ago, and we knew of each other, but we never played together. And Mark had a gig. He had a record come out at that time. And we got in the rehearsal room, and me and Charlie looked at each other like, you know what I mean? And, like his eyes said, yeah, I know what you mean. We just had this really beautiful, whatever that thing is, that unexplainable X factor connection in our, mm-hmm. in our playing and appreciation of each other's playing and connection. So when we recorded the first incarnation of the new Disciples of Soul, Richie Mercurio, he played on the record and on Soul Fire. And so Richie, I called Richie to do the tour, and unfortunately he had prior commitments, and he couldn't go out with us. So my first thought was, I gotta see if Charlie's around. And so Charlie did our first tour with us of Europe in 2017. Oh. And then Charlie couldn't make the next tour, and it just worked out, and Richie was available. And then Richie stayed for the subsequent tours. But Richie and Charlie are, two of my favorite musicians and favorite people. They're just, beautiful souls.
Well, our coolest song in the world this week is Dick Cavett, also the name of the famed TV talk show host. And God, he was on the air pretty consistently from like 68 to 96, different networks and so forth, but pretty much on the air almost all the time with the show. What I want to talk about this video that you also made for the song, but first, what does Dick Cavett represent to you?
Dick Cavett, I was very young. I mean, I was probably, my parents used to watch his show, and it was on in the daytime, like in the late 60s. And I immediately, loved music from the time I could, drool. I was always drawn to music. I was almost 3 years old when the Beatles played on Ed Sullivan, and my parents let me watch it. And I mean, I was very young, and it, you know, it seems like a dream, but they, I said, did you guys let me watch it? You know, the Beatles, and they verified it. 'Cause I thought, was I dreaming that?
Yeah.
And you know, it was just, you know, I was too young for it to change my world the way it changed, you know, Stevie and Bruce, and, you know, 'cause they were, you know, they were prime age. They were 13 or 14 years old and, you know, ready to get in the garage. I was, you know, I was ready to get into my, you know, I was just getting out of my diapers, you know. But a couple of years later, you know, my parents were watching a show, and I would see, oh, look, it's, you know, one of the Beatles is on. John Lennon, you know, is on with his new wife, Yoko, and, you know, and Janis Joplin and Jimi Hendrix and Sly and you know, every, you know, all the, he was like the presenter. I look at Dick Cavett as the presenter of the musical renaissance that was occurring at that time. And even just the art and cinema renaissance that was going on. And, you know, the guy's brilliant, intellectual. He's, you know, he was one of the writers for the Johnny Carson show. You know, he has a tremendous sense of humor, and, you know, he was a comedian, and, you know, so he's this sort of extraordinary, iconic figure from my past, you know, and from anyone that grew up, you know, that's my age, that was into music, would see all their heroes on his show. So it was profound.
How did the song come together? Why? How did the song come together?
It's interesting, you know. It's one of the songs that's on side B, if you get the vinyl, and that, which is like being sentimental and nostalgic of our past. And but I'd written the song. I think I actually wrote it before recording some of the other songs for the record. It was, and I'm writing this song just about, you know, the song is about being 14 years old and trying to figure out, I'm horny as hell, and I have no idea what to do about it. And okay, and then you realize, oh, then you kiss a girl and you go, oh, somehow me and the girl are supposed to figure out what we do with this energy that is cast upon us, you know, biblical energy, you know. So it's about kind of finding your way, you know, trying to figure out how to have sex. And what would always happen is, you know, we'd always get so far, and then, you know, it's like, well, you know, you got to take a cold shower, and we would just watch Dick Cavett, because, you know, we never were able to get to point B at that, you know, when we, you know, it took a while to happen, you know, it was like figuring it out.
Right.
You know,
right.
And yeah. So that's really it. It's really sort of Dick Cavett was sort of like, okay, you know, we're not, can I say fucking on the air?
I think you just did.
We're not fucking tonight. So I guess we're going to just have to watch Dick Cavett. You know, it's like, we're going to have to watch Jimi Hendrix on Dick Cavett, or, you know, whoever the artist of the day was.
Well, what's so cool here is you made a video for the song, but you got him involved. How did you get, or who thought of, hey, you know, I got a song called Dick Cavett, he needs to be in this video?
Well, it was one of the most magical things that's ever happened in my life. And, you know, I've been blessed, you know, first and foremost, being able to play, being able to do what I love my entire life with people, you know, that I respect and care about, you know, being an artist, being a musician. That in itself is a blessing. You know, we've had some, you know, there's been some great highlights, you know, working with Stevie and, you know, performing with people like McCartney or Roger McGuinn from the Byrds and, you know, Carole King and all these things, like your heroes, all of a sudden you're in the same room with them and they become your peers, you know? So one day, and after the song was finished and everything, I started having dreams about Dick Cavett, about him loving the song and just, you know, and just feeling that, you know, like this pull or this connection. And I kept thinking, I have to call Stevie or I have to call Louis or Dennis, someone at the label. And, you know, we need to figure out how to make this connection. And it just never came up. Whatever, you know, we got busy with other stuff. You know, we did the shows with Steven when he was home with Bruce earlier in the year, and it just never came about. And I never said it to anybody. It's just something that I kept in my heart and in my dreams and in my consciousness. And one day, Rich Russo, Rich calls me up and he says, he says, Mark, he said, you know, first of all, I want to apologize because if I overstepped any bounds here, I want to apologize in advance. I said, okay, well, what happened, man? So this dear friend of mine is, you know, he's Dick Cavett's guy. Like, he's been working with Dick Cavett forever. And I got an advanced copy of your song and I sent it to him and he loved the song and he played it for Dick and Dick loved the song. And I'm like, Rich, are you fucking kidding me right now? I'm like, I almost started crying because it was so, man, it was just so profound. It was so, you know, Manfred, in our lives, man, I mean, you know, we have dreams, you know, and you know, just knowing Steven, you know, Stevie Van Zandt I see Steven as an alchemist, you know, he draws things out of the universe, you know, so it's like this magical occurrence happening on Steven's watch and with this record. I was just, you know, I was completely blown away. And then, you know, I spoke further with Rich and Dick's guy, Robert Bader, great guy, you know. Turns out me and Robert, I found out the day of the video shoot, me and Robert Bader were born in the same hospital, Brooklyn Women's Hospital, 5 days apart from each other. And we were both in the maternity ward at the same time, like down the hall from each other.
Wow.
And I was, you know, in the midst of, you know, the day, you know, we were doing the video, you know, we're at the video shoot. So it's like, man, there's some very interesting connections here. Meeting Dick and his wife, Martha, they invited us into their home, man. They made us feel so incredibly welcomed. And so it was just this dream that happened, Manfred. I still pinch myself that it actually occurred because he's truly one of my childhood heroes. You know, he presented their images to me, and you know, and all these people loved Dick Cavett, Jimi Hendrix and Janis. You know, he had this connection to these, you know, this deeper connection to these artists, you know.
So you mentioned Rich Russo there, and we need to point out or remind folks that, of course, he's on the air here in the Underground Garage, and he's the host of The Jersey Guy Does Jersey. He's our resident Jersey expert. As you described the song to us, to me, did you get the opportunity at any point when you were working with him, speaking with him, to sort of explain, you know, how the song came together, what it meant to you?
You know, man, when I first met Dick, he said, no one's ever written a song for me. It's like he was as jazzed about this as we were. He was like, you know, it's like, hey, man, we're singing his name, but like, you know, we're praising his name. And he just, it's like he's on the same page. It's like, man, you know, we never sat down and discussed how this, you know, why the song was written, why we wrote about Dick. He just got it, you know, and his wife just got it, you know, and it's like, it's such a win-win because here's, you know, Dick is not he's not a kid, man. He's in his 80s, you know, and, you know, he hasn't exactly been, you know, getting the acknowledgement that he got when he was, you know, in the prime of his career and everything. So for someone to just say, hey, man, you mean this much to me, he was blown away. So it's this amazing exchange of energy, you know.
We have to make sure people are checking out the video, of course, checking out the song this week. I want to talk about another cool cut on the album. I guess it starts off side two, Soul Infected, and it starts off with these lyrics describing a kid shoplifting a Rolling Stones album. And I wondered, is that drawn on your own experience?
Yes. it's totally from my own experience. When I was, I think I was 14 years old, there was this department store called Two Guys on the East Coast. I don't know if they were out West or in the Midwest or anything, but You know, on the weekends, you know, my parents would take me and my sister and, you know, we go, you know, whatever, buy clothes for school or, and I was, you know, I was very, you know, I was very determined to become a good musician, at, you know, even at a young age. And I was, you know, I was into Hendrix and Clapton and, you know, and Cream, the Cream and Blind Faith Clapton, I should say. Right. And, you know, Johnny Winter and all, you know, like all these, you know, Dwayne Allman and Dickie Betts, these were my heroes. And I, you know, whenever we'd go to Two Guys, my mom and my sister would go look at, you know, whatever girl stuff. And my dad would go to the automotive department. And I, you know, I go to the music department and they had songbooks. In those days, they had vinyl records. They had like these displays of like, you know, the latest vinyl singles that are out and kind of like Sam Goody's. They had like a miniature sort of Sam Goody's record store within this department store. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking through the music books and there's an Eric Clapton book. And it was like, you know, the best of Clapton. And I said, man, I gotta, so I went over to my dad and I said, Pop, I said, can you get me this book? You know, I probably mowed lawns, you know, maybe I mowed lawns, but I didn't have any money. And he said, no. He said, not now. He said, maybe we'll get a few along the way. So I went and asked my mom and she said, go ask your father, you know? So I'm like, oh man, this is not happening. So I go back and I'm like, I'm pacing. I'm walking with the book and I'm pacing back and forth. Finally, I walk out of the store with the music, with the book. And I go into the parking lot and I'm putting the book under the hood of my dad's, you know, like where the windshield is, under the hood to hide it. And when I got home, I would take it out and bring, you know, like sneak it into the house. Meanwhile, I put it under the hood. I get tapped on my shoulder and the security guard caught me. And he brings me in and he brings me into the office and, you know, and he has like a uniform on and I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to jail, man. My life is over. Calls my parents, brings them into the office. They are, you know, they're steaming, you know? Anyway, you know, so yeah, like that, you know, the crazy shit we do. And I learned a great lesson. I never stole again, you know, so it was a very important lesson for me. But man, it was like, it's the Eric Clapton book. I mean, like no one can say no to this, but it was no.
And you learned, the important lesson you also learned was don't ever get caught again.
Exactly. More importantly, if you are going to steal, don't get caught. That's our lesson for today, kids.
Well, cool tune. Another one I wondered about the Grateful Dead. You describe, you know, various characters in it, kind of and conjuring the dead. You must have seen them. How often did you see the Grateful Dead?
I saw the Dead. The first time was 1976 at Roosevelt Stadium in Jersey City. My cousin, who was a couple years older, turned me on to the Europe 72 record. Mm-hmm. And I just got it, man. I mean, you know, you either get the Grateful Dead or you don't. And in that fertile period, like in, you know, the early 70s, I think till the later 70s, to me, was they were in their prime. And I got to see them a few times in that period. So they've always, you know, Jerry and, you know, it's always been, and that's, it's great songwriting, man. It's like, those songs could have been written 150 years ago. They're really timeless songs. And you really get a sense of another place and time in those songs. Like when, you know, when the world was, you know, I don't want to say more innocent, but it was more primal and it was like wilderness. And then, but it still applies today in some strange way. But anyway, you know, the song, you know, I'm just writing the chorus and I'm like, it just made sense. You know, it's like, I'm thinking of like, you know, what's that song? You know, it's like, it's so weird how the chorus came. Cause I started singing like song titles, you know, or, you know, artists that I liked, you know, like Spirit in the Sky by Norman Greenbaum or, you know, and then all of a sudden I go, you know that song, you know that song I'm thinking about, the one about the train, you know, and, which is Casey Jones, you know, but you know, by the one about the train by the Grateful Dead. And I was like, did I just fucking say that? And by the way, man, and as you know, Manfred, because you're a writer and an artist, these things happen to us, and we're, we, you know, we put our antenna up and we are blessed that these things come through our antenna. You know, it's coming from the source, you know? And I'm like, did that just fucking happen? It was one of those choruses where it's like, if it was on someone else's record, I go, man, I wish I wrote that one. You know, it's one of those songs, Manfred, and they only happen when they happen, man. You can't sit down to write that song, you know?
I love your analogy there, thinking about working, you know, setting up the antenna and picking it up, you know, that's a great.
Yeah, man, that's what happens, you know? You become completely present. Like it's pure, you know, there's no past, there's no future. And your antenna's up, or you plug into the sun, and it's just microseconds. You plug into the sun, and it's like, look, the sun just leaked out onto my page here, man. You know, it's great.
Well, hey, so I want to ask you about the closing track, "Tomorrow Never Came." So you're conjuring up the Beatles and kind of their spiritual face. So first, let's talk a little bit about the tune, but then I do want to ask you about the new Beatles song too, and your opinions on that.
Yes.
So Tomorrow Never Came, right? Would you put your antenna up for that? How did that come together?
Yeah, man. You know, it's funny. That song started out as something completely different that I wrote in the heart of the insurrection. And it was really heavy. And I kind of the lyric was too heavy, and I decided, you know what, I'm not gonna finish this song like this, and I just put it aside. And then when I started really digging into the record, I just put the track on without the lyrics, without the melody and the lyrics, and I was just in that space of and I was just thinking about, you know, where we came from, man. It's like, you know, hey, man. Dylan, you know, Bob Dylan and the Beatles, it's like, not only did they teach us, you know, like what a great song is and what a great artist is and, you know, how to convey a message to the masses, a positive message or an insightful message.
Yeah.
But they were like, they're really teachers, man. I think when you look back, you know, these are like gurus of the day in a sense, you know, certainly are gurus, like as artists and musicians. But, you know, and it's like, man, how did we get to where we are right now? And it's sort of like, it's sort of the culmination of the whole, it's sort of like the arc of the whole record. It encompasses it because it says, look, man, it's like, this is magic, you know? And we were able to get to this magic place. And it's like, hey, brother, you know, how do we get here? You know, and how do we get back? You know, it's like, how do we get back to the garden? You know, so it's really, you know, it's really that sort of, you know, dreamy, hippie, you know, let's really create peace. Let's really create like love and understanding, you know, and let's, you know, because, man, right now, you know, anything can happen, man. These people can, you know, the world can be blown up in a second. Anything can happen. So if we don't come from love, we're doomed, man. It's more evident than ever. I think it's like, it's so in our face. There's so much division. It's like, let's get back to the garden, you know, let's get back to love and understanding, or let's find it. Let's finally find it on a mass, you know, on a universal level.
So let me ask you then, what do you think specifically about this, the new Beatles song? You must have heard it.
I heard it, you know, I heard it twice on the Underground Garage. You know, it's really, it's like this whole technology, man. Technology is wonderful. You know, it's amazing what we can do in our bedrooms. Like, we can create a symphony in our bedrooms. So I think, you know, it's, you know, Paul's playing the slide. I mean, I love hearing John's voice, you know, and I know that they took this really, really even like pedestrian work tape of John's and extracted his voice.
Yeah.
And it sounds like the most, it sounds like the, like one of the, you know, it's this amazingly recorded, the perfect, you know, the perfect microphone, you know, and the perfect microphone preamp picked up his voice. I mean, just the technology can do that, you know. And then, you know, to have, and I haven't seen the video yet, like the making of, or, you know, the,
right.
which I think will alter my feeling of just hearing the song, you know? But I feel like, you know, wow, man, George is, I was just distracted by certain things. George isn't playing that slide. I believe Paul's playing the slide.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, okay, that's Ringo. That's John. It's from another place and time. It's another universe, you know, and it's like marrying the two universes. I don't know how I feel about it, man. It's like, as much as I want to hear a new Beatles song, it's like the Beatles were the 60s, man. That was a lifetime ago, you know? So, you know, I have mixed feelings about it. I loved hearing John's voice. You know, I loved hearing, you know, sort of like the throwbacks and some of the arrangement thing that Giles did. You know, it's sort of like the strings, but I felt things were too slick. I felt it was too modern sounding in a way. It's hard to explain, but
well, that's funny there. Cause you've mentioned it being from the 60s, but what you're describing, of course, the modernist slickness to it, of course. Well, there you go, man. That makes it much more contemporary.
You know, yes, the, I the know, which you thing. Don't want. So, you don't. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. I agree. I mean, I do. If I think it's a overall, I think it's a cool thing. You know, it's that, yes, like the, that's not my, is it my favorite Beatles song? No,
right.
But the fact that there was this demo. And that's a song, existed this very, very rough form. But the fact that we can hear it kind of flushed out, is it exactly the way he would have wanted it necessarily? Maybe not. But, and it becomes more of a collaborative thing by virtue of the other guys being involved. So,
yes,
you know, if he had not been murdered and they had worked on the song somehow, but George, you know, it never came out, and George's, his contribution was present, and they put it into the song. Whether that make any difference, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, I think it's a cool thing to have happened and a cool exercise to have done. And as you said, it's a chance to hear, John Lennon's voice and him to be, yeah, just resonate in a current time, you know, it's something that can still speak to people. So, you know, let's say 20 years from now going forward, will the fact be that it wasn't, you know, that it came out now? Will it be seem so far removed, or is it just part of, you know, just another Beatles track that came out later?
Is it just a like Stephen calls it, corporatocracy? Is it just a move that, you know, it's like a part of it feels like a corporate move. It's like, we have this machine called the Beatles, you know, Beatles Corporation, whatever. It's just like, this is the new, you know, this is a, the new product. We'd like to introduce you to the new, you know, it's like you go to a concert and, man, it's so beautiful and emotionally moving, you know, Paul, you know, performing with Lennon on a screen, you know, or Natalie Cole and Nat King Cole performing a song together. But it's like, you know, these other artists, you know, like Bing Crosby doing a duet with Michael Bublé, you know, it's like, what is going on right now? It's like, you know, it is like the world, we're living in this sort of on the fringe of AI everything.
Right.
And, you know, it's like we grew up, man, when we grew up, it was just real, man. It was happening. And now it's like, okay. And John's soul is in that song because you feel it. And is John pleased with, you know, from John from the other side, like John's sitting in his chair going, Am I pleased with this? Is this a really beautiful gesture from, like, to actually have me to be present today in people's lives? And I'm on the other side, you know. So that's what I mean. I don't know what to make of it yet. It's almost like,
you know. So Berry Gordy, sometime in the late '60s, early '70s, he was investing a lot of money in coming up with a computer program. They're trying to develop computer programs that would generate hits,
because
only so many chords, certain progressions seem to be more memorable, resonate. But so they, now in the end, they didn't have the technology to really do that. So there is, you know, that is always part of, because it's called the music business.
Yeah.
And I feel like I know exactly what you're getting at with the, what it was, what the phrase used that Stephen used, a corporatocracy or whatever, where you're using AI that, okay, now, you know, we can, you know, we can create, you know, put in all the Beatles songs and now come up with a new Beatles song. Well, to me, that is markedly different in this instance. You know, there was a fragment of something, a whole song.
Yes, I agree with that. That I agree. Yeah.
And as an experiment to sort of cap off things, then I don't feel as harsh about that. But yes, if it continues that, oh well, this was, that really resonated with people, and now we've made a lot of bucks from it, then let's go ahead and see. Paul's got a new song, and we'll go back and see all the different guitar licks that George Harrison has ever played, and you know, put them in the mix here and see what his part might have been. Then that seems grotesque. You know, as opposed to in this instance, George actually did play some guitar, and that gets used in the thing. You know, so I mean, there were real parts were still used in an honest first generation sort of creative use, as opposed to just recreating it artificially.
Yeah. It's like they were collaborating with John's ghost at the time. Like I believe that, you know, he's in their DNA, he's in their cells. You know, these guys are, you know, John, Paul, George, and Ringo are a being. You know, they're all separate beings, and they're also, you know, this one sort of, you know, beautiful beast, you know. And so I truly believe that, you know, they're the only ones that have the right, or you know, to attempt anything like this, and it's sanctioned by, you know, John's spirit is in it, so you know, it's all everything's fine, and it's beautiful that we can do that, but just from my own thing is like I'm still getting my head around all these things, and it just happens at a time where, you know, you can. Go to a machine and press this button, and this button, and it makes, you know, the perfect song. It's like, I want a lyric about, you know, I'm talking about AI. Right, I want a lyric about, you know, teenage frustrations, or, and I want a melody. I want like a happy melody, and I want a funk groove, or I want a hip hop groove. It's like, you could fucking do this now. It's like, Or you can have Morgan Freeman's voice on everything. You know, everything is like that you hear now is, oh, it's Morgan Freeman. You know, well, we're looking at a Taylor Swift's image, but we're hearing Morgan Freeman's voice. You know, it's just, the world is so, I mean, it's so unbelievable right now. And it's so, you know, it there's all these wonderful things, and there's all these scary things, man. It's, you know.
Well, all right, Rob's, well, going to tie it to another tune, let me ask you this. So the you're doing these doing some gigs out here on the West Coast, the new album's out. Are you going to do any shows in support of Armageddon?
Yeah, I plan on doing a show. Right now, it's like this sort of, there's a lot of things going on in my life, just like, you know, transformational thing. So it's the holidays, like doing stuff around Christmas. It's like there's not enough oxygen really, I feel like, to go and do a couple shows, you know, do a few shows. So probably gonna wait till early in the new year and do like a proper, you know, album release and just kind of get everyone involved, and you know, but so not right now. So there's nothing planned at the moment, Manfred.
Well, let's talk. I want us to go out on this track, Good Press, really rockin' tune, on the album, very Who-ish, even. What's the story on Good Press?
Good Press is another one of those songs. It's like, you know, and it's interesting we're talking about it, because I'm in California, and I'm, you know, near sort of like, you know, Santa Monica Freeway. Yeah. It's, you know, so it's really just being nostalgic about, you know, like I was too young at the time, but I would have loved to have been, you know, in the time of, you know, I went through the drug thing and, you know, we were musicians when we were kids, and we met a lot of girls and stuff, but it's sort of like this magical time of, you know, hippies and free love and, you know, it's just more that nostalgia of just kind of being in that place, that sacred space of that moment. You know, and of course, you know, life is never, you know, reality is never what your fantasy of it is, you know, but it was more like, you know, where people were just more open and free about, you know, acceptance and, you know, allowing people into their lives without being so fearful or angry or divided and wanting to, you know, I mean, people take out guns now, you know, you have an altercation with somebody and people get killed, man. It's like, at least then it was like, no, man, let's make love, you know, let's get high together. You know, there's none of that. You know, it seems like everyone's like about making money or criticizing someone else's point of view or hating on somebody, you know, being anti-Semitic or anti-Black or, you know, it's just, you know, I want to go back to that time, man. I want to go back to the time when I was too young to really fully appreciate the depth of the consciousness of that time. And we need that now more than ever, man, for transformation.
Mark, thank you so much for joining me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Thank you, Manfred.
We're going to give a listen now to your track, Good Press. It's off the new album, Armageddon, out on Wicked Cool Records. Taking a listen to Mark Ribbler here in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Good press, girl, you impress me. On a Santa Monica freeway, reload 1973. Sit down on my sofa with a cup of jasmine tea. Steep the bag, beat the rag. The free press just ain't free. Baby, sweet, caress me. Keep it confidential. Yeah, there's no place in this crazy world that I'd rather be. Any press is good press when you're pressing up on me.
That was Mark Ribbler here in Little Steven's Underground Garage with a tad of his tune, Good Press. It's off his new album, Armageddon, out on Wicked Cool Records. This is the Mighty Manfred. Thanks again to Mark for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Sammy Zavenza for producing our podcast. Courtney Hadwin, she's a dynamic singer in the UK and a veteran of several singing shows, including America's Got Talent. She's had a number of singles out this year, and we'll find out all about her next time around on your Coolest Conversations presented by Hard Rock in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
Rest up to you, speaker rest.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.